This is the July 30 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Chip Nellinger is here from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing in Morton, Illinois. And Jason Winters, our special guest today. He's from Columbia Grain International. It is in Valley City, North Dakota. That's about 60 to 65 miles due west of Fargo on Interstate 94. Thank you all for being with us. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Online on demand at WILLAG.org. Now, Jason, this is not the first time you have been on Commodity Week. It's been a few years now, but I do want to ask you about the facility that you work in and at, Columbia Grain International. Can you tell me a bit about it, where it's located, and primarily what the operation is like?
Yeah, so we're, like you mentioned, we're about 60 miles straight west of Fargo on 94. I work at the Valley City location, but we do have two other grain elevators in this area, one in Jamestown and one in Rogers. But we have about nine elevators around, or mostly in central to eastern North Dakota, from here up towards the Canadian border. And we have about 14 locations in Montana, which do a lot of wheat and edible and pulses. We actually, in Valley here, the last year or two, we actually have a new edible bean facility that we have other merchants and people that run, but we handle edible beans from here, both in this area, and they bring down edible beans from the Grand Forks area. They got a couple other plants up there, but primarily what I do, I'm in origination and buying and merchandising, and for the Valley City location, and we have been primarily corn, soybeans, and the last few years, the wheat acres continue to go down, but we still do see some wheat throughout the year or in this area. But like I said, the acres have been going down the last year or two, and this year, with all the heat we've had, it sounds like we're just starting to see some samples come in. We haven't dumped any loads yet, but we've seen a couple samples, and just talking to farmers, it sounds like our wheat bushels, our yield is going to be down quite a bit from the last year or two, where we've been in the 70s, and now we're looking maybe more like 45-50 and a lot higher protein. So it's going to be interesting to see what this wheat crop looks like, and it probably gives us a good indication of what corn and beans will be like as well here going forward. So.
And I want to come back to that in just a moment, but I do want to understand some more about the facility. If you take a look at it on Google Maps, there are two grain elevators there located directly next to each other, both with their own rail spurs, and there are three lines on each of those spurs. Where do you ship to?
So we primarily ship, and we continue to handle more corn and every year. Acres have been going up. Last year, acres were up quite significantly, and this year, I don't think we lost any corn acres. I think we actually gained some. But we've had most of the corn that we handle out of this facility and out of the Jamestown and Rogers facility go west coast out to the PNW, and there's been a strong market out there really since last winter, last spring. So we continue to see good demand on corn going to the PNW, the West Coast market. And of course, that goes over into the Asian countries, you know, Korea, South Korea, and some of the countries over there. And soybeans, we used to handle a lot more soybeans on shuttle trains going west coast, and of course those were always going mostly to China, but within the last couple of years, we've had two soybean plants that were built, one in one in Castleton, Green Bison, and the other one in Jamestown, over by Jamestown, Green Bison over by Jamestown, and North Dakota Soybean Processors by Castleton. So now it's always kind of a battle at harvest to try to get in between and try to still handle as many beans as we can. You know, like I'm sure most people have talked over years, you know, over the last year, where, you know, last year the soybean demand to China wasn't as significant as it's been in other years. But right now, this year, it looks like we've got some good sales on to China. And, you know, we've been selling shuttles of soybeans to the PNW this year. So,
Matt, do you have questions, given the background that he's given you, and things that you might be thinking about as it's related to that facility or to the broader commodities in general for Jason?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things come to mind. You know, first of all, you know, what do you see as far, first of all, what are you posting for basis? We know basis has been kind of a problem, and how much corn are you holding on to right now? Because clearly we're hearing a lot about, especially in North and South Dakota, parts of the West, that, you know, their basis, I mean, my customers in that part of the world talk about, you know, how wide their basis is, first of all. The other thing is, you know, we have an office up in Almont, North Dakota, and I know that the crop in their area looks rough, and you kind of alluded to that a little bit, but, you know, how bad do you think the crop has been hurt so far? You know, if the weather does change and you do get this abatement in temperatures, you know, what kind of potential do you think that you're going to have if Mother Nature finally decides to cooperate?
Yeah. So the first question on the basis, currently we're posted at 55 under. And like I said, we're still selling late summer trains and to the PNW and making that all work. There was a lot of good corn production. Like I mentioned, we had a lot more acres this year, and the yield last year in North Dakota was 158 versus 149 the year previous, and a 143 before that. And so we did have a lot of corn acres, but between both ethanol plants that we have on both sides of us as well, and the ethanol plant in Dakota, our basis was a lot wider earlier. I think we're kind of more of a typical, more normal basis now, but a lot of the ethanol plants in the area and around North Dakota were big buyers earlier on and got filled up kind of on that first initial rally that we had back in March, April, May. And so so whatever corn that's left out there, we've been working on getting those bushels into the elevator and moving them on to trains and going West Coast with them currently. So, as far as the crop goes, yeah, that's going to be the interesting factors going forward here. We had about 5-6 inches of rain since May 1st, but the last significant rain we've had kind of in this Fargo to Valley City area was an inch back on July 9th. But we've had almost 16 days of 90 degree weather. I think we're like second or third now on for that many days in July. So this heat is really going to start to take a toll on these crops. They've been holding on actually quite well, but I know chances of rain here the next day and maybe on Monday, but anybody, I mean, these are going to be $1 million rains if somebody can get anything significant now. So,
Chip, do you have questions that you want to ask of Jason, or shall we move on?
Yeah, Matt stole my thunder a little bit there, obviously, in the middle of the weather market here. Was interested in what the crop looks like out that way. And also, you alluded to this, you know, kind of emerging biodiesel, renewable diesel demand. How do you see that going forward? I mean, is that going to be something that really tightens up basis longer term, and especially with China now back in the game and beans going out of the Pacific Northwest? How do you see that up in that that region going forward as far as this new biodiesel demand?
Yeah, so with both of these, you know, we saw it with the ethanol plants first, you know, back however many years ago, when ethanol plants started to pop up in the North Dakotas and, you know, in South and Western Minnesota, you know, how that helped our basis out on corn basis back then. And then with both these two bean plants, you know, chasing after bushels that, you know, that usually, you know, most of all the soybeans grown in North Dakota, 90 plus percent of them, you know, all went to the PNW and over to China for how many years now. But with both these two plants, they're and with where crush margins especially been, these plants are just, you know, they're just buying any beans that they can get their hands on. So it's tough from an elevator standpoint in Columbia Grain to, you know, to try to stay in the middle of some of these bushels, you know, when they get, when, especially when like this time of the year, when supplies are getting tight, and they're needing to still try to buy beans to crush them. So we've seen them, you know, they were wide last fall with most of the markets, but they were the first ones to kind of firm in into the new year. And then recently, you know, they've been optioned to pay in overs to try to continue to buy beans, you know, to get to harvest basically. So
if I remember correctly, the Castleton plant may be relatively new. I don't know about the Jamestown one, but both of them have come online. Much like the build-out of ethanol in that northwestern part of the United States, which began a whole new demand area for you. Are there more processing plants, more capacity coming online in your area or in North Dakota that are notable?
I know there is one up towards Grand Forks. I haven't heard much recently on it, but I know there was a possibility of maybe a bean plant going in up that direction. So I don't think it was supposed to be as big as either of these two plants. Both these two plants crush close to 120,000 a day, I do believe, 100 to 120,000. So, and they were both built within the last 2 or 3 years that they've come online. So,
and so when we started this conversation, you alluded to the fact that you were bringing mostly corn into the elevator now. That had to do with the two soybean processing plants, one to your east, one to your west. But I don't think, unless there's just fewer wheat acres, and I believe you told us that too, that the acreage has changed for those crops. Maybe both soybeans and corn have gone up and wheat has gone down.
Yeah, and this just didn't happen overnight. I mean, it's been happening over the last, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, where this area used to be a lot of wheat and then some beans, and then eventually, you know, with corn moved in and corn acres just continue to grow really across the Dakota or across North Dakota. So, but it's been established here, like I said, you know, for quite a few years here now, corn and soybeans and the wheat acres continue to kind of go backwards. Last year and this year, we've actually seen some more canola acres come in, just because of some of this not so good ground. They've struggled to get real decent enough soybean yields, and so they've tried canola, and that seemed to turn out last year. But this year might be a different story with the heat. So we'll just have time will tell on that. But the corn acres in North Dakota have just continued to move north and west really the last 5 years. So,
okay, let's turn our attention to the marketplace directly. Chip Nellinger, I think I'll start with you. When you think about what's happened over the last week in the commodity markets, what is top of mind for you?
Well, I think two things. You said top of mind, inferring one thing. Obviously, the weather is very uncertain right now. You know, some pockets of dry weather. It's not ideal anywhere. It's a little of varied from good to as good as last year to, you know, half a crop compared to a year ago. and everything in between. So I think this weather is the big question and going to be the immediate direction the market takes, depending on how these rains are the next 36 hours and the extended forecast. I think demand takes a back seat. I think that's something that's totally different than maybe what we've seen the last 2 or 3 years in here. So even with big crops out here, it doesn't mean we can't go lower into harvest, but I think we maintain a higher level just because world stocks are shrinking. Demand is so good on corn and beans both that I just think there'll be a good commercial appetite under this, keeping us maybe higher than what people expect at fall. But certainly in the short run, the top of the list is the weather, Todd, and what happens with rainfall over the next 3 days here.
And Matt, is that the same for you? Is it all about the weather now, or are there other factors that you really have to worry about?
There's no doubt. There's a lot about the weather. I mean, obviously, you came in today and a wheat market skyrocketed on what's going on in the Black Sea, and it lent a little support. But, you know, you see corn settle 6.5, 7 cents off the highs. And, you know, a lot of that is due to that wheat market kind of leaking off. But, you know, I'm with Chip here. I mean, if we do get decent weather, Todd, to finish this crop out, and maybe not everyone does well, but if you get a good system that comes through, shores up some of the issues, I just struggle to think that the market will rally much heading into harvest. But I think the one thing that I've continued to say is that, you know, the story is far from over. I mean, when I look, for instance, at the corn market, you know, you got record world demand, record U.S. demand. Stocks to use on a world basis is the lowest we've seen since 2013. And, you know, that works good until it doesn't. You know, at some point, if you do have a massive issue, and I think you can't discount, you know, what a typical El Nino does to Brazil's growing season. They're usually dry in the northern half of their growing region. You know, and this, with this being a super El Nino, quote unquote, you know, there's no doubt that there is some risk here to world production. So, yeah, I just feel like storage is going to pay some dividends for those growers that have it. And then on the bean side of things, yeah, this domestic demand's just been flat out fantastic. You know, Chip talked a little bit before about with China back in the market. I mean, if they actually do buy 25 million tons of beans, we really need to see this 53 bushel yield come to pass. I think anything you get much below that, and I think you're going to see a very well-supported market. So weather over the next 3 to 4 weeks is going to be super important.
Jason, because you do ship to the PNW, has corn demand really been good this year for your facility?
Yeah, like I said, we've shipped a lot of shuttles, both mostly BNSF, but we got a couple CP locations as well. But the demand for corn, like I mentioned earlier, it's actually been pretty strong all the way since last January. We've seen good corn demand going out to the West Coast and into that Asian realm for for almost a year and a half now, and it looks like it just continues. I mean, it just continues to roll forward. So I think we are anticipating the same thing. Really not seeing it yet. The new crop bids really haven't stepped up, but I know we've still been selling some old crop trains. And like I said, versus last year where we didn't have much of a soybean program at all, you know, I think it's probably a question mark on what China's really bought or for sure out what, you know, off either the Gulf or the PNW, but for surely they're buying something in their bid. So, and which is very encouraging to both the elevator and you know, to the farmer in the area. So
is your estimate that there is a great deal of corn still in storage on the farm in North Dakota?
I think there's some yet, but I think a lot of it, what maybe might still be out there is might be already sold to, ethanol plants or other elevators. I think we're kind of getting to the bottom of the bends, basically. I know been chasing after, corn the last, really 2 months here, just, trying to get it to move, with a little bit better basis. And of course the market's helped out some. $4 corn, has helped move a lot of corn across North Dakota. But I think we're getting down to bend bottoms and some bends that are swept out. So I'm not sure there's as much that there'll be much left ending stocks than what the government's already showing. So
Chip, I want to turn your attention back to the Black Sea, the Middle East, the issues that are happening there, particularly related to the price of crude oil. Soybeans and corn can fluctuate with that. What did you think of the current price jump in the crude oil market and the lack of the ability of grains to follow in the last couple of days?
Yeah, I think it depends on the forecast. I think the forecast and the weather in the short run has kind of pushed and pulled this market. I think longer term, it's getting, unfortunately, a little more apparent each day that this, Strait of Hormuz issue is going to be here for a while. Inventory is, of crude oil in many areas of the world is kind of scraping bottom right now. To me, that means crude oil and other energy prices are going to stay relatively elevated here. $80 is all you need. Hopefully we don't see 95, 100, 110. But if we stay at $80 for an extended period of time, which looks very possible, I think that just continues to breathe life into profitability on ethanol and renewable diesel. Maybe some inflation talk again, although the Fed's, going to do all they can to try to counter that. So I think that effect is still there, Todd, although I think that maybe in the short run, the rain that they've added in the forecast in the short run has maybe got us off focus a little bit for the minute on energy prices. And, certainly that area, the Middle East, the Black Sea, definitely something that is probably longer term supportive rather than negative at this point in time, just due to the fact that both of those regions look to kind of stay in flux and in tension for longer, unfortunately, it looks like.
Matt, I want you to put your farmer hat on just for a second. Think about your MAP and DAP or your dry fertilizer that you might normally put on in the fall. How worried are you about phosphate? And how much do you believe that producers will cut back? For instance, Josh Linville from StoneX is of a mind that half of that demand will just go away because the price is so darn high and producers will believe that they can get by without it.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually talked with Josh about this, Todd, and he came on and did a webinar with us here not too long ago, and we discussed a lot of that. I think whenever you look, for instance, some of your nitrogen sources certainly backed off there for a little bit. Urea, India came in and bought, I believe, 1.7 million tons of urea yesterday, which is probably not going to do anything to help us on urea prices. But yeah, some of the N's backed off some, but the combination of N, P, and K, whenever you're looking, at for instance, December 27 corn, trading just shade under 490, you throw all your costs in there, just a typical what you put on, a lot of folks in this part of the world are 250, 250 DAP and potash mix. And so, I think that that's not going to happen once again this fall. I know a lot of growers backed off a little bit last year. They were looking at, after 21 and 2, I do believe a lot of growers, did not only a maintenance program, but a buildup program, which was good, because, of course, there was a lot of money made in that time frame. You get in here to a year like this, and you've had three straight tough years. This year, if a producer didn't get much sold, I think that they're very concerned about what their profit margins are going to be like. You're still not too far from the high. So, I mean, these are way better prices we've seen the last 3 years, but there's still just not a ton of meat on the bone if you didn't raise a big crop. So, how concerned am I about DAP prices? It's concerning. I think it's going to affect what producers do as far as their application rates. And I don't know that it's going to cut that DAP 50%, but Josh's a heck of a lot smarter and well-versed in this subject than me. But I do think it's going to have an impact. I think a couple of things are going to happen when you get into prepay time frame, which we're getting very close to it right now. I do think that a lot of the ag chem retailers are going to report that, once again, their volumes are off of, for instance, 2 years ago. They may not be off much from last year because I do think a lot of people, once again, cut back. But at some point, I think that you're going to look at this. We dropped 3.5 million acres of corn this year.
you know, what's the incentive of the grower going to be to go back to 97 or 8 million acres of corn if we don't see a little more of a rally here versus what our input costs are? So, you know, I do think that D's 27 corn, in my opinion, needs to see some appreciation if you're going to get the kind of acres we're going to need given what demand we've got right now.
Okay, Jason, I don't know whether I would consider you in a fringe area anymore. That used to be the case maybe 10 or 15 years ago. Not so much, but there are more choices. Producers have or had been more choices for them, depending on what they've done with their machinery, I suppose, at this point. For crops, do you see corn acreage in North Dakota going down or in the Western Corn Belt?
Well, like I said earlier, the corn acres will last. For sure, the last 3 years have continued to grow in North Dakota. Speaking of fertilizer prices, I, you know, talking to guys this spring, lots of producers, farmers were very fortunate to have bought early on before the spike hikes. So they in fertilizer, you know, re-endap and so the corn acres stayed up. Corn actually, you know, looked good. Until the last week or so, you can see it going backwards, but, it's really time will tell, you know, it's going to be, you know, where does this corn end up yielding for them? And production wise, and like Matt stated on, you know, where's price at, for new crop, there's probably going to, this might've been maybe a peak for now until we see, some of the costs, especially fertilizer, you know, eventually go back down again. This might have been a peak for corn acres in North Dakota this year, just because of the price and both the price of corn and the cost of the inputs. So
yeah, producers in that northwestern part of the Corn Belt will be under a lot of pressure because they don't use anhydrous ammonia. They are urea users.
Correct.
That's the one that will be on the short supply across the whole of the planet because much of it does come out of the Mideast and particularly has to travel through the Strait of Hormuz. So at this point, it's probably not going to be available easily for those folks in North Dakota. Now let's talk about what producers should think about as it's related to marketing. Chip, have you changed how you're considering the second half of this calendar year, at least, and what producers should do with their marketing plans after the rally that we did have and now looking forward into the fall?
Yeah, we've changed a little bit just from the standpoint that with the world stock shrinking, like we talked about earlier, even trend line yields are going to be met with good demand after harvest. And so I think you got to break it into two things. Bushels that need a home and you don't have storage for at fall, that's probably a different plan. And that probably bears some sort of action, whether that's selling, whether that's buying some puts, protecting those bushels that need to move at fall. If you've got storage and can hold this crop longer term, I think storage will pay. It's not the right use for storage. On-farm storage is supposed to be meant, you know, to capture better basis. But we want some ownership longer term, just for everything we've talked about, the Black Sea, the Middle East. You know, we were talking about DAP and MAP and nitrogen prices. Probably the biggest wild card isn't North America. It's probably Brazil. Can they get all they need on top of this super El Nino, on top of the drought in Europe? There's just so many things lined up. We think that ownership longer term, whether it's, you know, physical or on paper, you know, into winter, next spring and early summer, will pay good dividends. That doesn't mean ignore risk and do nothing. But I think you have to look at, you know, separate your plan into the bushels that have to move at fall versus what you can store longer term.
Matt Bennett, your thoughts going forward?
And I hate to say this, but I can't disagree with anything Chip just said there. Yeah, we're a big fan of getting, you know, using your storage at home there. I got to think that corn's going to be really good property on down the road. You know, once again, I do think that you're going to have to figure out a way with the kind of demand that we have, you know, how are you going to come up with enough production to keep from whittling down stocks even more this next year? Like I said, world stocks are one thing, but, you know, U.S. stocks clearly are going to take a pretty big hit this year, just simply due to how many acres we dropped. You know, even, you know, like Chip said, if you ended up 183, you know, you're going to be down in that 1.8 or below, you know, let alone if you end up at the old, you know, yield of 179. I don't think that it's that low necessarily. It's just that was the old high, you know, before last year. So I do think that corn's going to be good property. As far as what you do right now, though, I couldn't agree with Chip more. I tell you what, we need to be making some decisions here soon for those bushels going across the scale. I always get a little bit frustrated, if you will, with the mindset that we're going to make a decision when we go across the scale. I mean, it's typically just not the best time to make that decision, kind of get pushed into one thing or the other. And, you know, commercial storage is not cheap by any stretch of the imagination. So, you know, it depends on what the grower needs for finances during the harvest, but I would certainly be making some decisions here pretty quick and probably getting some of this corn price, getting some worst case scenarios locked in. If you want to have ownership on some of those bushels, you know, I do think that over the next 6-8 weeks, you'll probably have an opportunity maybe to get, you know, some cheap call coverage if that's something you want to do.
And finally, Jason Winter at Columbia Grain International. What are you telling producers today?
Yes, continue to watch your cash markets, aka your basis. Continue. We have quite a few producers already that work with marketing firms. Continue to work with them on getting a plan for harvest. If you need one, there's, you know, search one out and find one that works for you. Along with you know, buying grain at the elevator here from farmers and producers. We do, Columbia Grain does also offer we call it Columbia Grain Producer Solutions, which is another marketing alternative for those that are interested. And basically that uses options and derivatives to help manage risk on both corn, soybeans, and wheat. So
I know that Matt and Chip would both be available if folks are looking for some place that they would like to have a marketing plan put together. Hey, I thank all of you for joining us today. I do appreciate that. Is there a final word that each of you would like to talk about for the day? And maybe it might be on soybeans because we mostly took up corn in that last segment. I'll start, Matt, with you.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, Todd, I think this is an important time frame. We know weather can cause some very big, you know, volatile changes in the market. And so if you're a grower that has bushels that got to go, you know, whether it's corn or soybeans, we got to be making a decision soon. You know, if you do get widespread rainfall, we know that it's going to be really tough for this market to get back on the path it was on, for instance, last week. So, you know, as far as soybeans go, demand's just been phenomenal. They've been super resilient. Yeah, it's not been a great week for beans, but I mean, if most growers would have known a year ago, you know, they were going to be looking at pushing $12 beans still at this time frame with more acres this year, I think they would have thought you were nuts. So we do have some blessings, even though, you know, it's been a rough week.
Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing.
Yeah, beans to me, Todd. I'm scary bullish on them, and I'm not sure that's saying much. Maybe you should do the opposite of me, because I've been bearish for 3 years. They haven't gone as low as what I would have thought with the massive crops out of Brazil. And now I feel like the other shoe has dropped here. If we would happen to end up just marginally below trend line with the demand that we have, all these issues that we've talked about, the Black Sea, the Middle East and the Strait of Hormuz, the Super El Nino, can Brazil get all the inputs that they need in time to plant? It could be scary what beans could do down the road here. You know, again, take that with a grain of salt. Doesn't mean we can't go a dollar lower in the short run, but of any market out there, I think beans potentially have the puzzle pieces lined up. If you put them all together here over the next 4 or 5 months, they could be scary bullish in that market. So, you know, again, full disclosure, you know, maybe based on my track record of being bearish for 3 years, and they didn't go nearly as low as I thought. Now flipping to bullish, maybe it's time to sell them. But I just see a potential for a lot of bullishness in beans longer term.
And Jason Winter, I'll leave the final word for you. Anything on soybean?
Yeah, on soybeans, just, you know, last year our bean, you know, our corn crop was awesome, but our bean crop was just so-so. This year, we're looking at another so-so crop here, especially if we don't get these rains like they're talking up for us. So just going forward on beans, it's going to continue to see to be interesting to see the battle between you know, the P&W, the China's demand, and the P&W a lot stronger than last year, and both these bean plants if we end up with a so-so bean crop again. So
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. You may hear the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, or search it out by name, Commodity Week, in your favorite podcast applications, including Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. Thanks go to our panelists this week, including Jason Winter. He's at Columbia Grain International out of Valley City, North Dakota, along with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net in Windsor, Illinois, and Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef AgriMarketing. He is in Morton, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.